Generate is supporting my vision to improve the financial literacy of 100,000 Kiwis by sponsoring Keep the Change. Cheers, Generate. Head to generatekiwisaver.co.nz/change to find out more. Getting in the KiwiSaver fund that suits you and your situation is key to making sure you're maximising your investment. Generate are an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of long-term performance, and they can help you do exactly this. Their advisors can meet with you to talk about all your options when it comes to KiwiSaver to help you decide what's best for you. Too many people never get KiwiSaver advice, but not you. Go to generatekiwisaver.co.nz/change to book a no-obligation chat with a Generate advisor. A copy of the product disclosure statement is available at generatekiwisaver.co.nz. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited. And of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns. Welcome in. You are listening to a previously recorded podcast from the Keep the Change catalogue. Now, before you turn this off and think, no, I think I've already listened to that one, just remember that you might hear something in this episode that you didn't hear the first time round. That can happen because we change who we become in that time as well, and you may not have needed the information or the lesson at that time. So these lessons that are titled with an acronym to start, in case you weren't listening, are designed to bring you up to speed with some of the principles and some of the podcasts that people have said have really taught them something. Now, you might listen for a second time, or this could be the first time you listen because you've found Keep the Change later than other people. And that's completely fine. We're just stoked to have you here and listening to the podcast, increasing your learning. So please don't turn this one off. Get it in the old ears and let us know what you think. Welcome in. You are listening to a very unique episode of the Keep the Change podcast. Now, every now and then I sit down with somebody for a podcast for Next Advisory in my accounting practice, and they are just as good as explaining principles about leading your own life and your personal finances as they are as to how they've been building their business. Now, I got to sit down with Israel Whitley, who is a young guy and he's on the way up and he's going to go a long way, and it's very, very evident, and he's already gone a long way. Now, in this podcast and Next Advisory, we spoke about a number of things which I think you'll be really intrigued by, and it kind of shows you that you can really start with not too much, but then if you have a competitive killer attitude, you can go a long way if you're then prepared to get the right people around you. And I think you'll find some of the stories that he tells remarkably incredible as well as inspiring. So instead of just posting it up on the Instagram page to say, hey, you should check this podcast out, I thought I would do a quick intro over here that would allow me to then put this at the start of the podcast that I do with Izzy that you're about to listen to. And you can listen to that and learn, because there is a lot in there that you'll be really intrigued by. There's some stuff around his dad passing away and the way that his dad taught him before he passed away, and just a number of things that already clients from our Next Advisory side and people that listen to that podcast have said, wow, that's been really, really incredible. So I, given it's such a good piece of content and it is an hour long, I wanted to get it in front of a number of you as well and hopefully get it into your ears, because I know that one or two of you could be in the same position as Izzy was when he was growing up or from the same background and think, wow, you know, that's exactly what I needed to hear to just build that extra belief in myself, or to think that, yes, I could do what he's done. I could do what you want to do. You know, you might not want to do what Izzy wants to do. He wants to build out a $100 million business. So that's a turning over $100 million each year. And that's just the start kind of thing for him. Whereas you might not be thinking that big or whatnot, but you might just find some things in this podcast that help you change the way you're looking at the world, or change the way you're looking at business, or taking risks, or your own upbringing, or where you come from, and things like that. So I would ask that you chuck this one on double speed if you can, or sit tight and get through the lot, because there is an hour there. But I guarantee you that if you get through the whole thing, you will learn a lot about this guy, a lot around the way he was brought up and the way he thinks and how he does things that just seem to be so different to how a lot of other people would do things. And if you want to be extraordinary, like I think this bloke is and will be as he continues to grow, you've got to do some things that are pretty extraordinary. And that's exactly what he's trying to do. And often we'll ask business owners, we'll say to them, what keeps you awake at night? And the top three things that they'll tell you are basically cash, their staff, or not getting the work done, or something going wrong with their customers, that sort of thing. Now, Izzy looked me dead in the eye when I asked him that question, and I didn't give him these questions. The whole interview is just off the cuff. And he looked at me dead in the eye and said, how I can be better tomorrow. Wow. You know, you do not often hear someone so naturally be so driven and that be the first thing that comes to their head when you say, what keeps you awake tomorrow? So a very different type of mentality in person. And I think you'll get a lot out of this podcast. So rip into it. And drop me a message on Instagram on the other side, and I'd love to know what you think. Welcome in. You are listening to a very special episode of the What's Next podcast because we've got a leader on the rise, a business leader on the rise in the studio today. He's had his favourite tune on. Izzy Whitley, great to see you, mate. How are you?
Good, mate. Cheers for getting me in. Good to see you again.
Yeah, 6 years in business recently for you.
Yep. Feels like 18, but nonetheless, still here enjoying it, which is the main thing.
You haven't aged at all, mate, so what's the secret?
I'll give you a bit too much information. My best mate's actually got me a Botox voucher for my forehead because he thinks I'm aging that badly.
So. Really? Yeah.
I'll take the compliment from you.
Yeah.
Everyone else says the opposite.
I've copped a bit of that, mate. But you must be thinking about it. I'm like, I actually met another accountant and he had a client who does Botox. And like, make you one of these and then you're sweet. But no, I haven't succumbed yet. This tune, tell us about this tune, mate. This is your favourite tune. We usually get people to play their favourite tune once they come on the pod. And this is a bit of a banging. You were telling us you do something pretty unique about the songs you listen to each week. Talk us through that.
Yeah, I every like week I get that Discover Weekly on your Spotify, and they refresh a new songs based on kind of what went through your phone prior week. And on my way to work on the Monday, I'll listen to it, which is about 20 minutes. So it's kind of got four songs, and I'll pick what one's the best, and that's me for the week. Same song all week. Keeps me consistent and keeps you on the same frequency the whole week.
So do you just put it on repeat?
Yeah.
Like just click that Spotify repeat button?
Yep, absolutely. Don't change it and keep what works, and then come Sunday I'll change it up again.
Wow.
I've always done it right. Like honestly, it's on the plane or whatever, I find that it's a big part of actually almost just like an anchor point to consistency, right? Like it's...
Yeah.
I try and be as consistent as I can in anything. And I just always found it, even when I was a kid, like if I found one song, just mates that. Always call me DJ Repeat, but
DJ, <loved it>. DJ Repeat. And have you got a song that kind of sticks out from over the years that you've just thrashed so much that now that you hear it, you can't cop it anymore?
I've got a playlist on my Spotify and I call it Boomfer.
Yeah.
2.0, because Boomfer original got too many. So all of my favorite songs from each week, I add to it. So Boomfer. I don't have a specific blast, but I've just got a whole bloody playlist of them.
I'm sure we can probably, if that's on Spotify, we can probably look you up and find it. Mate, whilst we're there, is there anything else that you do that you think sort of unique and you've built into your routine or approach and that you've found really useful for yourself in business or personal life? Like, that's pretty unique, right? That's pretty different as such, but it works for you. And it makes sense.
Yeah, it's probably... Not off the top of my head, no. I think probably a little bit OCD with some things, but apart from that, doesn't necessarily make the week any different. I'm a bit weird with my clothes and showers, and that's about it.
Yeah, yeah. And I see you've introduced an ice bath for the crew. Yeah,
ice bath Fridays, man. It's honestly, like, I kind of get in on a Friday feeling like my finish line for that working week is kind of home time on that Friday. And since I've been doing it for the short time I have been, 4 or 5 weeks, honestly feels like I've got another gear come Friday, and it's fantastic. And it's cool seeing the team jump in it, right? Equally, I enjoy them getting a bit of a kick out of it. Whether they like it as much as I do, I'm not sure. But they say they do at face value. But just constantly trying to look at little things which can give me a bit more edge or a bit more gas in the tank.
Nice.
To kind of keep pushing.
And how long do you stay in there for? A couple of minutes?
Oh, I try and do 10 minutes.
Jesus.
But it's amazing how quickly your body can adapt from the first time. Like the first time, I think I did 2 minutes, then the second time was 5, and then kind of away laughing. 10 minutes feels no different to 20. You just end up getting bored, to be fair. you get your kind of kick after at 10, they reckon. So.
Ever sauntered?
Every other day I'd sauna. Yeah. So we don't have a sauna in our office yet. We're getting one put in 4 weeks, which will be great. So once that in there, I'll be away laughing. Like the gym I go to here has got a steam room. So I always do the steam room. Then they've got like an ice shower that I jump in after every day, which is great. And finding routine kind of when I'm on the road, Les Mills has a sauna in Wellington. IHF in Christchurch, where I go, has a steam room and a plunge pool, which is an ice bath, realistically. Just trying to find those kind of...
Has it been hard to convince some of the team that doing those types of things is smart and a good thing to do for your health and your mental health?
Some of the team, right? Some people just aren't morning people, so they don't really see the benefit of it, and that's fine. I think you kind of find who the competitive people are in the space pretty quickly when you're throwing out almost little competitions or mini mind games. You got the people who want to come out there and prove something, and the desired outcome for that, right, is that they do dive into that and then they do get an outcome from it and continue making it a part of their week. So
nice.
We get probably 50% buy-in on the ice bath at the moment, hoping to raise that, but who knows?
Sort of might be different to some hot colds.
Yeah.
You talk about finding an edge and getting a bit of an extra gear and then extra gas in the tank. Is that something you've done your entire life prior to business as well?
Well, I think once I got into business, it changed a lot. I actually don't really remember how I tripped upon it or kind of fixated on it so much. But when I was starting out, I was so focused on compound time, and I was never focused on that before. So there's not really too much I've taken from pre-business. The work ethic is definitely pre-ALH and fit out. But nothing too transferable apart from that competitive edge, really. I've always been competitive. I actually never really liked the sport I played growing up. I just loved winning.
Football.
Yeah. So
you were quite good at it, weren't you?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I was fit. Yeah. I was fit and I could kick with my left foot, half kick with my left foot, but there's not too many lefties in New Zealand, so it made the selection process a bit easier.
Yeah. Good man. And so so that's where you kind of learnt that competitive nature. You started to understand it a bit more, that you really liked the winning.
Yeah, it's interesting. It probably goes back to my upbringing. We grew up in an ultra-religious home, like super Christian belief family. And I wasn't allowed to play competitive football with people who weren't Christians on the weekend. So I grew up, till I was 12, I was never allowed to play a competitive game of football because in our religion it was called you're unequally yoked, right? So you couldn't actually go and play with people that weren't. But that was normal for me. I didn't think that was too unnormal. And the first game I ever was allowed to play, we actually my dad had to talk to like my granddad, who was the pastor, and kind of almost get his approval. And I never forget kind of going to the game, how nervous he and I was that someone from the church was going to see us, right? Because we were breaking the bloody status quo and the rules. And then we played and we lost. And I'll never forget, I went to go and get in the car and Dad had driven off. And I knew exactly what that meant, is that I had to walk home because I lost. And I got home, it's about a 3K walk. And I remember I got home and he said, just one thing moving forward, I don't take losers home. You can find your own way home if you lose. And so that was a reminder. But then if I look back from before 12 years old, everything was to be better than... everything was to be better than, or be faster or more athletic than my siblings from my dad to me, I was never going to be more athletic than people 5 years older than me, right? But it was always a competition, everything I did. But it was never like that for my siblings to me. So it's almost like I was like the little test dummy to see how far I could get pushed. So, yeah, I guess the competitive stems from there. So it's actually just been able to harness it and control it.
That's what I was going to ask, because I'd imagine there'd be some people you'd tell that story to that would go, well, that's really unhealthy, or your dad shouldn't have done that, or whatever, right? But you've obviously taken the lesson from it and then figured out how you can channel that for positive outcomes.
Yeah. Look, people take of it what you will, right? If I had to do my upbringing again, sign me up.
Yeah.
10 times over. It mean I got to where I am today and where I believe I think I can get. Just one of those things, right? It's negatives, but take positives out of it and push on.
Yeah. Nice one. And whilst you're there then, we'll carry on that path, where do you believe you can get to?
First step, I generally think this ALH business can get to 100 million revenue.
Should I forgot to even say where you're from?
And that's right. I firmly believe that in the next 5 to 6 years, ALH can be generating 100 million in revenue.
Yeah.
In New Zealand, and who knows if we've got a bolt on either side of that in Brisbane or Aussie. And equally, the other business I'm involved in, Aiden and Brett, who drive that business, they've probably got pretty similar ambitions to me. So that's the first hurdle. I don't try not to get too caught up in the bigger picture. I kind of try and get somewhere close enough that feels like it's within arm's reach. And I generally feel like we've made the right inroads and are putting the right infrastructure in now ahead of time so we can kind of reap the rewards in a few years.
How has the journey gone from that, those sort of early days where it was you and a few of your lads and whatnot, and sort of maybe we'll head down to headquarters on a Friday.
Seen it there a few times.
Shit, I was hoping you weren't going to mention that. You know, that might be 2 o'clock or it might be five, or to now going, shit, you know, scale and culture, team processes, structure, bigger visions. Like, what's that switch been like to flick?
It has felt relatively like organic for me. Having the mentor I do in Rob, couldn't ask for a better person to be. I'm sitting on my shoulder and helping kind of direct the rudder at times where it might be a bit loose. But look, it's felt relatively organic. I feel like I'm a product of someone who's been believed in and has a big work ethic and a real willingness to learn. And equally, again, the shareholders that I have, I feel, have believed in me and actually empowered me. So I need to make sure I'm doing that to my leadership team at ALH. And provided they feel the same way, problems just become quickly solved and we just get back to the drawing board. So there's not necessarily been too many like pivot points where I feel like, holy heck, I need to really change who I am or how I am.
Yeah.
Just have to go with the flow and believe in the people that you have around you and having clear standards of what they expect of me and what I expect of them.
Nice one. And how did you come across, so when you say Rob Fife, how did you come across Rob? When did that relationship start?
Mutual friend. Gotcha. Back in the day. And I actually ended up going on the Milford track walk with my mate and Rob and Sarah and a couple of their friends. And I'd never really got to know Rob or Sarah too well because they were uncle and aunties to my mate. And that Milford track walk single-handedly changed my life, right?
Like, really?
ALH would have been 6 months old, 5 months old when I went on that Milford track walk. I'd never spoken to Rob about business just because I actually never really anticipated ALH to go beyond it. But from walking into that Milford track walk day one, to walking out of it, having no phone coverage for 4 days, unintentionally and not knowing who the hell Rob was and the CV and the experience he had, to walking out after 4 days with him, next to him on the Milford track walk, and Sarah, was like life-changing, right? Like, if it wasn't for that, then I wouldn't be where I am.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have kind of thought that what was on the horizon. A really kind of funny and like reference point that I look back to is growing up in Gizzy, the way I was kind of brought up, my uncle was like my hero, right? And he's a top bloke, and he's doing really well now. And I never forget, he was on 144 grand. And I was like, oh my goodness, like this guy is like crushing Minted. It, right? And then, right, that's a fantastic income, that's a great wage. But then to then, like, within a few years, be kind of, you know, on a walk with someone like Rob and even some of Rob's friends that were on that walk, you're kind of like, wow, like, you actually see what's achievable and what can be earned. And you almost remove barriers from a small-minded upbringing to thinking, hang on a minute. You know, this guy can do it. Yeah, he's a bit of a freak, but
so
I reckon I could see how close I could get, or you know, and with his help and Sarah's help and equally who they've introduced me to, Jonty, it's just been great. So a mutual friend who we went on a Milford track walk with kind of realistically changed my life, and it's been a hell of a journey since.
And so you, for that 4 days, were you like a sponge once you started sort of gelling with Rob?
I was probably only a sponge on the last 2 days.
Gotcha.
Because I was kind of like, man, this guy, you know, like, I didn't know what the barriers for what was okay or not okay to talk about. If you ask, like, my family or my siblings, the first thing they'd say, the only thing I was ever infatuated with was how tall someone was and how much money they made.
Yeah,
that was like the question I'd asked from the time I was, as soon as I could walk. The fact was how much money someone made and how tall they were. That's all I ever wanted to know about someone. And I don't really give a shit about the whole height thing anymore. nor do I go and ask people how much money they make. But I think it's a question that I've always appreciated, not necessarily the dollar figure on someone, but I guess to the position where I sit right now and the revenue that we're generating and the challenge it's been to get there, I kind of look back and think, geez, you know, Rob running in New Zealand and Sarah, respectfully too, running 62 models. It's like you start to appreciate and understand the challenge that it gets to get to those numbers.
Yeah.
And I've never done what I have to get a buck, right? Like, it was never my intentions to set out to get rich from in a quick scheme. I just was hell-bent on the challenge and loved it. So,
yeah. Wow, what a result. What a what a chance meeting. So you grew up in Gisborne.
Yep.
And then you made your way to Auckland.
Yep. When I was year 12,
yep.
I came up to Westlake.
Yep.
And that again was a real pivot point for me. Got taken in by a guy who now is one of my best mates, his family. And they almost just adopted me like another kid, right? I moved up there, me and him, two 17-year-old boys living in a room on two single beds in the same room for 2 years, right? Like, you don't read about it too often, but it was that was still a hell of a better opportunity and living like situation than what I was, and I was buzzing, mate. I was stoked, right? I loved it. So went up to Westlake and then failed school terribly, right? And then got stuck into a building apprenticeship for a few years and loved it. Like, absolutely loved it, but ended up kind of in that, I guess, like, entering into the third year, I was starting to play footy a little bit too, and then I got mugged in town, and got my shoulder, like, wrecked, and I had to have shoulder surgery. So the recovery to being back on the tools was 9 months, and I had every intention to go back on the tools after that surgery, but I was kind of like, I was on ACC, and I kind of almost... I wasn't a national league, and it's not professional league. You kind of get $150 and some coaching money if you're lucky. But I was on ACC, so I almost kind of got the chance to live a little bit like as a professional footballer, I guess, or an athlete, to look after myself and kind of see what I could potentially generate in the way of like my performance. And then got stuck into a coach, Suns, who's crushing it, right? Like, he's a pretty big deal in New Zealand now.
Yeah.
Back in the day, he was getting stuck into it and helped me heaps. And then, unfortunately, the old ticker gave up on me and ended up being diagnosed with a heart condition, cardiomyopathy, and kind of got rushed to hospital after being told I'd kind of had a couple of heart attacks. So that was at 21. So. And you know, a year prior to that, lost my dad to suicide. So it was a pretty hectic, I guess from the time I was 16 to 21, a lot happened in 5 years, right?
Like
you leave home, you go and live with a stranger who then becomes your best mate, you then go into a building apprenticeship, go into uni, get mugged in town.
Having heart attacks.
Yeah, having heart attacks. Bunch of fun along the way. Yeah. Lose your dad. And then kind of back at square one at 21. And
did it feel like that at the time?
Yeah, it did. But
did you risk like that? Did you sort of have those moments of like, why me? That sort of victim mentality creeps in? Or
yeah, as strange as it sounds, I think from the minute I like found out dad had passed away, I don't know what it was, but I was always like, actually, it's going to say more about me as a person, a sibling, and a cousin or a nephew or a niece to my family on how I come back from this, opposed to like whether I dwell on it. Mm. And kind of coming back from it in the way I did, again, I was able to focus on footy and use that as a distraction. But then to have the heart thing happen, you're like, oh, hang on a minute, I've got to go again. Football was kind of all I ever knew. I never actually liked football. I just loved winning.
Yeah.
And
you striker?
And no, Jesus, I was a defender.
Okay.
Chuck me out wide on the left as a defender and I'd just try and run as much as I could. And then yeah, had to reset. And then I was kind of left there at 21 and never been one to dwell on anything, right? And kind of a few months after that that's when I came up with the idea with ALH and it was game on from there, really. I never looked back. It actually did the Milford track walk and passed the keys over to my brother for ALH for 4 days.
Yeah.
And then came back from that Milford track walk and I was kind of like, I had 8 people out on site at that stage. And I kind of thought to myself, you know, I just need to give this a nudge here and go for it and give it a crack. And I kind of thought if there's someone who could potentially give it a go, then I was backing myself that it could be me and then go from there. So
we'll get into ALH in a second, but just before we do, so that mindset of you want to show up for your family and who can you be going forward and whatnot, have you been able to look back and sort of pinpoint how you've been able to think like that? Because most people would default to fuck this. This is like, how's this all happened to me? I'm why try?
Yeah, I still can't click as to what point in my life that I felt like that. It wasn't like that was an unnormal probably thing for me. I was always a bit odd, to be fair. Like I fitted in. And it was not like I was ever like an outsider, but I was just a little bit weird, right? Like I kind of had some weird tendencies. Like I was kind of a bit like overly obsessive with things that a lot of people weren't, like little things, like a bit of a perfectionist with some things. Like even when I was mowing the lawns, like that was my first job at 12, I'd run the edger along it. I'd get the string line to make sure I could get the roller out, the pitch perfect. It's Kiehl's High School, right? Like, I had it looking like bloody Eden Park. It's fantastic, but I took so much pride in it. And I always just remember thinking, geez, I just need to be better than the greenkeeper that was, the groundsman before me.
Yeah.
And I used to go on, like, Google Earth and look at what it looked like before I started, and then, like, looked at it when I was like, fuck, I'm winning here.
I've done that.
I'm fucking better than that guy.
Oh, wow. And did you make the football team listen to the same song after the game for an hour? Or
if you ask people that have lived with me, they'll all say, geez, I just get sick of that guy with his music and that same song. To be fair, they probably think I listen to the same song all year because it's got the same beat in behind it.
Yeah.
It's just house music, just with different lyrics. So.
Oh, outstanding. All right, so then we're into ALH. So it was Auckland Labour Hire to start with.
Yep.
And you come up with the idea that you're going to help place some labour on different construction sites for people that needed some man or woman power.
Yep. Knew my boss was making a few bucks off me an hour when I was an apprentice.
Yeah.
And thought, geez, can't do any coaching or footy stuff anymore, so I need to start trying to make a couple of bucks on the side. And, kind of got stuck into it and did it by myself with no, like, external support. Started at $500.
Did you know what you were doing?
No. No idea. Geez, some days I still don't feel like I do. I think that's the, like, a really important thing about business. Well, I guess in New Zealand, don't take yourself too seriously. Have fun. Don't get Mr. Serious on it all, because then you kind of take the fun away from it.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then was really fortunate to get Sarah, who invested in kind of after 18 months, and just did a bit of a capital raise to get some working cash, right? Because we started with $500, our wage bill's intense, right? And it always is. Cash flow has actually always been the biggest pinch point for ALH as we grow, trying to catch a tail on the other end, right? We're kind of paying people every week, and then we're not getting that money till the following month, the 20th, XYZ. So
how long in did it take to have your first lesson of that?
I never missed a payment. Nice. I never not paid someone. So which was kind of proud, and I kind of always held myself to have that integrity, right? But yeah, did that, and then learnt when I needed the capital raise, got some investment from Sarah. And then I think it would have been 9 months after that, then we got Rob and Jonty on board. So so that's kind of the initial stage.
So you've got then is the Gisborne mindset, the scarcity mindset starting to change a bit to, shit, I could have something here? Or did it then take Rob to then unlock it a bit more to go, hang on, this could be even bigger?
So next to the next to the Milford track walk, the second most probably important conversation I've had in this kind of era of my life was I just got back from Sarah and Rob's wedding, and they introduced me to a guy called Jonty Edgar. And I was there and I met Jonty, and he said, hey, I've heard from Rob that you've got this labour hire business. Love the sound of it. Why don't we catch up for lunch when I'm back? And I was like, all right, cool. And so he invited me to a Bisu. I'd never been there before, right? So I turned up in my ripped jeans, my hoodie, and looking a little bit out of place. Didn't start too well because I don't eat fish. So and he goes and orders all this fish. And I said, oh, Jonty, like, I don't want to be rude, or you know, but I actually don't eat fish, mate. And he goes, oh, well, geez, we've come to a Japanese restaurant. Like, what are you doing? I said, oh, this is what it is. Anyway, Jonty said to me, he said, Izzy, how much money do you need to get this business to the next stage? And I said, I need $125,000 to get ALH to the next stage for cash, right? I said, oh, I'm going to leave all the money in the business, and that's just going to go to my cash flow. Then we're talking for 10 minutes, and then he said, all right. He said, well, I'll make a deal with you. I said, oh, what's that? He said, I'll make it $250,000. He said, but because I think you're going to grow this business quicker than you think, and you'll need to come and ask me for more money in 6 months, so let's just avoid that conversation. I was thinking, $250,000? Like, what? Hang on a minute. And then he said, but the other deal is that you have to promise me that when you start your next business, you're going to come and ask me and Rob for your initial investment if you do need it. He said, because I'll be honest with you, I don't necessarily believe in the business. I just believe in you right now, and I want to back you and you as a person, as a leader, and an upcoming business kind of entrepreneur. So let's make that deal, and we've got it going, and we're on. And I was kind of like, shook his hand, and I walk out. Never forget, rang my brother. I had a grey hoodie on, had Chuck Taylors on. I never forget on the phone to my brother, but like, mate, you wouldn't believe this conversation. I said, this guy just quarter of a mil, like it's $2, and he says he backs me.
Yeah.
And my brother's like, well, geez, you better deliver then. Like, you're telling me, you know? Like, and I think, like, integrity's been something I've been massive on. And I've always felt incredibly loyal and respectful to those who have supported me. So I always wanted to do right by them. And more than to prove it to myself, I always have strived to prove to my shareholders that they invested in the right person. So that was always at the forefront, right? Like, I couldn't have cared less about worrying about me. I wanted to get their return on their investment back as soon as I could, and then really push and go forward from there.
And have you eaten any fish since? Have you learned to eat
raw fish? I don't do it. It's a no from me.
And what was that feeling like, having someone, like as a younger lad, having someone just tell you outright, like, I believe in you? That must have been pretty bloody powerful.
Yeah, well, and especially if someone with his, like, background and kind of experience and what he's achieved and the success he's experienced in business, to have him say that, kind of have Rob sitting in there saying, mate, give it a go, you've got this, you know. I was kind of, oh, geez, maybe I do have something in me that potentially could kind of inspire me something a little bit different to most.
And did you must have, you kind of must have known from sort of your football days and just from other things in your life, you sort of have a little bit of that, like, yeah, like you backed yourself too, right?
Yeah, I backed myself. Again, to the football, I was never the best person in my team, right? Like, yep. I was probably the last person on the team sheet. But I always knew I was one of the hardest workers.
Mm.
I just wasn't really have any athleticism naturally or anything like that, which could have kind of pushed it forward. But, yeah, I guess I kind of knew I was really competitive. And I just had to harness that and hang on to that. And that was kind of the main thing for me.
Yeah. And so you start to place more people around Auckland.
Yep.
On sites, construction sites.
Yeah.
And then the world shuts down.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. World shut down.
Sites shut down as well.
Sites shut down. Everything shut down. But that period alone single-handedly kind of allowed us to be where we are today.
Yeah.
Everyone was taking their foot off the gas, cutting people, doing this, doing that. And I had to make the biggest call of my business life at that stage, right? Like, I had 6 people on board in the office at that stage, and everyone else is kind of paying their staff 100%, right? We did not have the capacity to do that initially. Mm. So what I had to do is I kind of said, look, guys, we'll do 50%. So that's a massive reduction. I said, we'll do 50%. But I promise when we make it out of this and we can recoup some of the cash, just to be safe, I'll top up what you missed out on before Christmas and it'll equal 100%. I said, I just need you guys to support me and have faith in my leadership that this is going to be the ultimate slingshot out of this downturn and we're going to come out fucking fighting.
Yeah.
And I actually, out of the 6 people, I only had 1 person that was probably a little bit hesitant. But the rest were kind of like, wow, what else are we going to do? We're just going to trust your word and go for it. And we repaid the people right before Christmas, which they probably preferred, rise money they didn't have. It's a good little kind of unintentional lump sum of cash before Christmas. And then, yeah, it was just game time from there on out. And I don't know what it was, but I felt like I got bloody possessed by a more competitive demon in me say, let's really give it a crack
here. Yeah. How old were you when we went into lockdown? Can you remember?
COVID? I would have been 24.
24. Shit, you must have been thinking, seriously, world, like, give me a break here.
Yeah, yeah.
All the shit you'd already been through.
Well, you know.
Must have been just working through it.
100%. But, like, I think the lucky thing for me is I knew I'd been through worse.
Yeah.
So whilst this COVID stuff was scary to a lot of people, geez, I had 2 things that made that look like chump change, right? Like, I was kind of like, what's everyone worrying about this for? You know, like, I nearly bloody died because of my ticker, and my dad died.
Yeah.
And I was like, geez, we can come out of this, you know? And I, like, that was such a powerful tool to have. And equally for me, I grew up in a really humble home, so every year that I was living was the best life I'd lived.
Yeah.
So it's not like when we went through COVID, I had to scale back my life, because at the time I was still only paying myself 37 grand a year.
Mm.
And that, for me, was still a great life, right? So kind of you had all these people that were stressing out, they had mortgages, they had this. Mate, I had no, like, stress, no responsibility.
Yeah.
I think I had a cat, and that was it. And it was just me against the world. And that's honestly how I felt it was. I was like, it's me against every other fucking competitor in New Zealand here.
Yeah.
And we're coming in hot.
Wow. How good. So what did you do during lockdown when you couldn't do heaps? Like, you must have been a pent-up bull. Were you just patting your cat the whole time? Or
I was just trying to stay fit and keep my mind occupied. I was running models. I was running scenarios. I was running forecasts of what could happen. I was funny enough, probably doing more than I'd done before. I was just finding things to do.
Yeah.
At that stage, we'd had the other business fit out, which was a year in too. So we kind of got these 2 new businesses, shit, right? We're like, hang on a minute. Rob, my bloody saving grace, was with the government doing like 20-hour days back to back. So him and my communication stream was like minimal.
Wow.
But it allowed me to grow up, and I had to, because I didn't have Rob to lean on as much as I normally did. So I had to make a few decisions by myself, and actually, if I had to do it again, that was probably the right thing. And I think you know, that probably was maybe a little bit of his game plan. He probably could have given me some more time.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I don't know if he could have, but but you know, I think he probably it was probably the right time for me to start making some big boy decisions and not leaning on old Uncle Rob thinking, yeah. Geez, hang on a minute, help me through this one again.
Were there any you made that he told you off for on the other side?
Nah, like, I've had a fair few whacks from Rob.
Yeah.
I think that's what a lot of people don't realise, but me and him are always really open to telling people that. Like, yeah. Talk about direct conversations. We've had more than a handful, right? But, again, it's one of those things you just have to take on the chin when it's coming from someone like him and realise it's coming from a good place and, yeah. and absorb it before you say anything. I just have to remind myself, shut the fuck up and yeah. just bite your lip and get into tomorrow. Tomorrow's a new day.
I've seen that man in the Les Mills on a Sunday just pumping out rep yeah. after rep of ab yeah. sit-ups yeah. and all sorts of shit, eh?
Yeah, he loves it. Then in an RPM class, he's always there.
Yeah, you look like you don't want to mess with that bloke, that's for sure.
No.
Yeah. Well, so then we get to the other side of COVID and now it's time to just let the peacock fly, yeah. so to speak, yeah. and just get after it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of what we did, right? We got a bit of runs on the board in Auckland and then kind of thought to myself, I'm going to give this whole regional opportunity to go. I said, I'm going to open up Tauranga. And then once we'd decided to open up Tauranga, we'd signed a lease on a building. I then got a phone call from a guy in Wellington who said he wanted to open up Wellington for me in 2 weeks' time. I'm thinking, Jesus, this is, fuck, why not? You know? I told myself I'm going to be competitive. So we've got this bathtub of cash, right?
Yeah.
With a big hole. We don't have a plug for that hole. The cash is going out because we're growing. Got both taps on full, and then I go and basically put two spares in the bottom of it to support these two regionals. And then we just went flat tack. And I think that year, I think I did 103 flights in an annual period just to try and be there as much as I could. So I was spreading myself, my bandwidth, right? It was just like so stretched. But we did what we had to do, and we started to build leaders within Auckland. We had two great people who are still with us in Auckland at the moment in leadership positions who just grew in those kind of times and allowed me to, again, focus on the bigger picture, because I think the great thing that we have is we have a team environment. We know what each person's doing to grow the business, which then in turn benefits everyone in the business, right? So I'm kind of like this bloody unhinged, bloody, you know, headless chicken just going ballistic, but I know that we're kind of taking care of what we need to in Auckland, so it was a balancing act at the start, yep. but yeah, so we got Tauranga and Wellington going. Tauranga, the first year of Tauranga was probably the most challenging. Like, I'd be lying if I said it didn't cross my mind to think, geez, are we worth hanging around out here?
Yeah.
But we just had to dig it in and keep going, and now it's really doing well.
So once you're in a region, you've setting up a physical location, and then you're trying to build a brand out and go, hey, did you know? And they're going, we've never heard of you.
Yeah,
and you're
yeah.
starting from scratch in every region.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's yeah. kind of like, in a lot of businesses, the great thing for me is I get to see the fit-out model, right? If we go and win work, we can then put resource underneath that work that we have won. Where at ALH, we have to find that person and then go and get the business. So it's a massive hockey stick curve before you actually start even breaking even, right? So
yeah.
it's and that's been a part of it. I never wanted to take any money from the business for the first 5 years because I just wanted to spend every cent on growing, and we just had to be really disciplined on that. Every spare cent was going to a new opportunity.
Wow. Good effort. Not many people could do that or commit to that.
Again, it kind of goes back to like how I was brought up, right? Like yeah. every year was the best life I'd ever lived. It was the best lifestyle I'd ever lived. So I never had to feel like I was sacrificing anything to do that, you know?
Yeah. Has it been tough, like coming from sort of a scarce background, let's say, or a smaller minded, you know, you weren't thinking as big back then, to now seeing, like, I saw some of the boys at the Warriors the other night, yeah, making yeah. this one, and I'm thinking, shit, you know, Izzy's paying for these beers, left, right, and centre, and you weren't there. Has it been hard to kind of let go of that shit? You know, how much is going out?
So I'm like, real frugal at heart, right? On a lot of things, I'm, like, a super tight ass, but then there's some things I actually just think are really important. And I think going out with a few of the boys from the office and taking some clients and having way too many beers and burgers on the way home. I love that shit, man. Like, yep. That's cool. That's the one thing. If you had to give someone a $500 pair of sneakers or $500 experience, I'd cringe at the $500 sneakers, but sign me up for that $500 at the Warriors or something, right?
Yeah, so yeah.
We just need to be reaping the rewards of the hard work, and those boys that you would have seen are the ones that have put in the shifts, right? No, yeah. We don't give those kind of those flexibilities to anyone who doesn't deserve it, and actually that's a real thing of respect in our business. Like, if you're doing that stuff, it's because you bloody deserve to, and
nice.
Have fun. Don't hold back.
Yeah, good man. So then you've gone Tauranga, Wellington, and then
we went Hawke's Bay this year, January.
Before you went to the next regions as such, did you sort of break the back of those regions first, or did you kind of go...
idea.
Yeah.
None of them, I've done no market... I put my hand on my heart, I've never done market research on any region we went to. I kind of just... And that probably wouldn't work again, right?
Yeah.
But no, we just went for it. So we opened up Hawke's Bay in January. We opened up Rotorua in April. We opened up Hamilton in June. And then we've opened up Christchurch in July. And then we're opening up Dunedin in 4 weeks. So.
Wow.
And Northwest will open up before the end of this year. So kind of six or so branches this year. So she's been a big push.
Yeah. So is there a branch manager for each sort of region?
Branch manager and a team of two.
Gotcha.
That's how we operate our regional branches.
Yep.
And then we envision those growing pretty significantly over the next kind of 3 years.
Yeah. And so then Auckland Labour Hire become Aotearoa.
Labour Hire. Yep. And then, always looking at what's next and potentially jumping over the ditch. So
really?
ALH could work well with Australia Labour Hire, right? So, went on a trip last week and it was really cool. It was probably quite a humbling trip. There's a lot more challenges than I anticipated.
Yep.
And I think the cool thing is, like, having a board now, they're constantly challenging you for those things where I'm quite, like, naive to think, no, mate, I'll get it done, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, hang on a minute. Yeah, I'll slow it down a little bit. Go slow to go right.
Yeah.
And, so in Aussie last week and in Brizzy and Sydney, it was really cool to catch up with some cool people from the industry over there. And it's definitely something we'll be looking at for sure and kick it off next year.
Nice one. So what's the team size now in terms of in the office and then people on site? Can you say that?
We had over 600 on site.
Today?
Yeah, today.
Wow.
Which is a really cool milestone for us. And we have 32 at the moment. I think we've got another six coming before Christmas. So.
Shit.
And I think kind of come Feb 1 next year definitely come April, we'll be probably north of 55, so in-house and knocking on that 800 to 1,000 on-site.
Wow. So a lot of people that will listen to this, one of their biggest challenges that they face is finding people.
Mm-hmm.
How have you broken the back of that, or what tips could you give?
Create a culture that people want to be a part of.
Yeah.
And look after your people. You got a lot of people who aren't willing to pay people a little bit more than what you might have to do. And like, I pay everyone above market, and the bonuses that we pay at ALH for the high-achieving staff is honestly probably double what people get in the market. So find a way to sacrifice personally in order for your team to feel appreciated and remunerated far more than what they actually would have anticipated.
Yeah,
and create a culture that gets buy-in from everyone in the direction that you want to be going. I think clear direction. Everyone knows that ALH wants, in our business, everyone knows 100 mil. That's us, right? And that's the first stepping stone. And again, creating that culture. And each business is different, right? Like, accountants are all different.
Mm.
Recruitment people are all different. But kind of reading the room and seeing what's, you know, if we've got a gym in our office and a half-court basketball court, because the boys love and the girls love the gym. Right, if we had an office full of, you know, Wilkie loves golf, Nashie loves golf. But if we had an office full of golfers, we'd probably get a golf simulator.
Mm.
But do you know what I mean? So it's just about trying to read the room and being smart with how you're kind of rewarding the office space that you're in.
And the environment you're creating for them. Yeah. And what about like physically getting them to come and work for you as such? Are you shoulder tapping people? Or are you telling the team like, hey, we're constantly growing. If you find the right people, tell them to come to you. What's the go?
Those two. But organically, if I hired every person that wanted a job in-house at ALH, we'd be double. Right, but it's so important finding the right culture.
Yeah, yeah.
Culture fits more important than revenue and profits. Like, it takes one bad egg, right? If you could have one person that build the equivalent to five people, but he was an absolute dick and he'd piss off three of those people, give me those five people.
And wow, that's a just back to the flight. So. Over 100 flights in a year.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you do on a plane?
Well, if it's between 7 and 5, it's a working day. Yep. I'm at my office. If it's a little bit before, or if it's like an evening flight, I'll always try and grab a little bit of a nap. Yep. But no eating on the plane, no eating an hour before the plane, because I feel really unproductive and don't have energy sitting there, right, like full of food. That was a tip from Rob. He flies a lot.
Wow. So let's unpack that for a second. So no eating an hour before you fly.
Well, that wasn't Rob. Rob just said he said a big thing he doesn't like doing is flying on a full stomach.
Yeah.
Because you just feel a bit sludgy, right? And it's probably more so for an international flight, but because I'm needing to move quickly, I don't eat an hour before, and don't if I do anything, I'll kind of just try and take some. I love cashew nuts, so I kind of always try and have a bag of cashews on me.
Yeah,
and I'll kind of snack on them on a plane. But otherwise, it's a working day on the plane. So I just treat it like an office. Never check in luggage ever, even when I go overseas. If I think I'm doing, if I'm doing kind of four flights a week, which I average at the moment. That's half an hour either side. I have to be there early if I'm checking in for an overnight. That's an hour, that's 4 hours a week. That's 8 hours a fortnight. That's 16. That's two working days I lose a month from having to check in, be a bit more distracted and not being functional or let alone optimal. So I'm super focused on the compound time stuff.
Wow. I learned about this last week from an American talking about always get the first flight because it's less chance that it'll be delayed or cancelled. And then, unless you're staying longer than 5 nights, like anything under 5 nights should be carry on only.
Yeah, yeah.
And just to remove the ability that, you've lost your bag, now you've got a new set of problems, just remove the ability that can go wrong.
Yeah.
What other areas of your life have you found where you can put time back into it or that compound time effect?
Mornings. Like, have to get hours in the morning. I was actually looking at my phone the other day, and I'll get my numbers right. I was kind of like, it's been a busy month. And I was like, I just want to see what my average time in bed is. Yeah. And my average time in bed was 5 hours 49.
Shit.
In bed, not sleeping. But I'm really fortunate that I'm someone who kind of only needs 5 hours. So if I can kind of go to bed at midnight, I can wake up at 5 or just a bit before 5. And then I kind of tell myself, well, if someone else is sleeping 7 hours a night, or in my instance, my competitor's sleeping 7 hours a night, I'm sleeping 5, I'm getting 2 hours, I'm getting 14 hours more awake time, functional, operational time than him a week.
Yeah.
And it all just adds up, right? So just squeezing time either side, and I make sure I'm productive with that time. I give myself a breathe on a Friday night, that's probably my downtime. Just up in the morning, operational, kind of start getting into it. And I don't read. I've never read a chapter book in my life.
Yeah.
I've probably never made it past 2 chapters, like, honestly. Yeah. I very rarely listen to podcasts. I just, so routine-based, it's probably almost a little bit robotic. Like, same song in the morning on the way to work, get in the car, put it on, full volume, get myself to work, in the gym.
Caffeine?
Yes, but I don't need it. I actually quite just almost, I drink so much Coca-Cola, I almost need to wean myself off it.
Yeah.
Coke Zeroes, which is not healthy. the only way I can kind of chop that is a coffee, but I just normally have the decaf, so not relying on coffee. But yeah, the time thing, it's just trying to squeeze time either side of the light, right? And and for me, that's really important. And I get a lot of confidence knowing that I'm kind of getting another 50 hours a month, then, which is an operational week than most people.
And then you've gone and added a amazing partner into your life as well.
Yeah.
And then got engaged.
Similar circles to you in the horse racing industry. So
How did you go finding enough time to be able to? Is that where you've gone from 6 hours to 5 hours?
Yeah. Man, like, kind of to her, to full respect and appreciation to her family, Lance has done incredible work for that family to kind of get to where he is, and he's had to sacrifice a lot, right? And Bridget has been, I've seen firsthand the support she has offered him, but equally does in her own account at the Red Barn. So G's growing up seeing that hustle, that grind, that sacrifice, and she gets it.
Yeah,
not many people get it, man, and that's the honest truth. So she's growing up in an environment which has seen the sacrifice in order to kind of get the treats later on in life.
Yeah.
And she's absolutely signed up to be a part of this journey, and that's really cool. And she's an awesome chick. She gets it. Never sees me in the morning. I'm always out. She's a professional sleeper. Yeah. So she's an 8 a.m.er on a good day.
Yeah.
And it's there at nights. And again, I get home, we have dinner, and then after dinner, I'm straight back on the laptop till kind of bedtime, right? And so it's full pace. But again, she's cool. She's awesome. Her family are great. It's actually really important having the family on board, because you can despise, and people can start to think that their family might be getting less time than they should.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, it's a common goal, right? Like, what I'm trying to achieve here, ideally, helps us later on in life. So
nice.
Engaged, mate. Feeling like a grown up. Wow. Getting married next year.
Yeah, nice. So be in the Red Barn or
on the front lawn.
Oh, nice.
Much to Lance's disgust. So he tried to get over to the Red Barn, but she's helping on getting married on the front lawn. So.
Yeah, awesome. Well done, mate. Cheers. Good stuff. There's plenty of balance here. I was thinking that a lot of people will be listening, thinking, "Oh, this bloke clearly can't have a partner." But you managed to squeeze it in. But
we squeeze it good, and you know, the good thing is kind of being on the road. Sometimes she can come with me on some of those trips. So her role's relatively flexible at times. So she might come on the road with me once a month or once every few weeks, and we still
make it
feel
work.
Like we get plenty of time.
Yeah. What keeps Izzy Whitley awake at night?
How I can be better tomorrow.
Wow, what a response. How you can be better tomorrow.
I never really like kind of sitting on what I've done that day, right? It's always about tomorrow. Every day's a new day, but if you think you can take it easy tomorrow because of what you've done today, then I'd consider myself a bit of a pussy. So no one knew that.
What happens when you're massively hungover or massively tired or sick? Is that hard to balance because you're like, fuck, I just want to get after it? Or you just do? What happens?
Well, maybe... Because you're loved up too, but I'm just trying to think. Maybe you haven't seen me out as much anymore because I don't drink. I'm not actually allowed to drink much because of my heart.
Yeah, gotcha.
So the hangover piece component is almost irrelevant.
Nice.
There might be 3 or 4 days I'm hungover a year.
Yeah.
In a working year, the New Year's and stuff, obviously. But the sickness hits me pretty hard because of my heart.
Mm.
So if I get a virus, I'm fucking wiped out.
Yeah.
So, but I still find a way, right? Like, and it's actually just listening. Like, I hate kind of succumbing to the fact I have to listen to my body when I'm sick, but I really do because of my heart. So just listening to that. And again, the hangover component's not really relevant. And that's actually allowed me to have plenty more
time.
Functional days in the year.
Yeah,
that was something that got enforced upon me and alone that gave me so much upside benefit to achieving.
Yeah, nice. Smart. What would you say is your superpower? It's a goodie. That's a tough questions around here, mate.
I think my one superpower would be trying to just get people to do something that they'd never do before. Like, trying to get them out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I can convince most people to do something they'd never think they'd end up doing. Whether it's an ice bath or whether it's a run up a hill or whatever.
Yeah.
Just trying to get people out of their comfort zone.
And were you like that for a long time? So in your football days, for instance, you could get guys to train hard? Yeah,
always like that. Yep. And in anything, I kind of always found it as a bit of a competition to equally put myself outside of a comfort zone with someone else. So.
Wicked. What advice would you give to someone that's early 20s with $500 to start a business?
Just go for it.
Yeah?
Don't make any excuses. Never succumb to one excuse as to why you're not where you think you should be.
Yeah.
I've never come up with an excuse as to why I think, you know, whilst we're doing well where we are, I still wish I was in a hell of a better position, you know. So I've never made an excuse as to why. So no excuses. Work your ass off and be willing to live a relatively shit life for your first 3 years of business. And if you make it out the other side, then you go again. If you don't, you've learnt a lot.
Yes. There we go. A $500 university degree would be more valuable than a uni degree. Any down moments that stick out for you, mate? And then how long, if so, did you hold on to those four before you went, you know what, just let's go?
I have never got up and thought I don't want to get into the office today.
Awesome.
And don't get me wrong, there's been some seriously challenging days. But I think, like, for me, you go in, like, I would probably say one day a quarter, you'd have a moment in the working environment that you have to perform. You have to be sharp, or I have to be so on the ball in order to get the win here. So I almost thrive for that moment and that discomfort of pressure to deliver. So I wake up searching for that moment, and if I'm ever in a downturn, it's always like, wow, shit, this is what I've lived for, right? It's like going into a football final. You're a little bit nervous. You know you've got to do your job to win. If you don't, you won't win. So you've just got to do a hell of a job. So the most daunting days I've had in businesses when you've had to do kind of, you know, dismissals or things like that, or make really big adjustments and changes, I've always kind of woken up thinking, Jesus, this is why I'm here. You know, this is actually why I like being where I am, because I get the chance to perform here.
Yeah, and then grow from it, and through it.
Absolutely grow from it, yeah. For sure. So, yeah, always thrive for those kind of uncomfortable moments that I know make me better.
Any other lessons to share with smaller businesses business owners out there?
Two things probably come to mind. The first, don't be a dick.
Right? Yep, nice.
Too many people were dickheads in business when they're starting out. It's like, and the other thing, if you're starting out, be human. Don't kind of try and make it out like you're doing better off than you are, because you're actually, people are far more welcoming, especially in this country, to people who are living behind their means opposed to beyond it. So how can you be likeable to people, and actually how can you live a life that people actually are interested in knowing about to sit in the same room with you to potentially get an outcome in it?
Nice. Do you have younger people now getting in touch with you saying, hey, can I have, you know, an hour of your time, you know, that sort of thing? Can you come on the next advisory podcast?
I'd probably get three people message me a week to catch up for a coffee. And I've kind of come to the rule for me that I will do one, like, public engagement a quarter.
Yeah.
Right. And I know you. Love what you guys are about. It's awesome. I love seeing your content and shit. And I generally get excited seeing what you guys are doing, right? It's cool. I love following it.
Yeah.
But equally, like the other podcast I did, it's a guy I know, right? So, and it's just cool. So I love jumping on there with like-minded people. But I'd do four things like that a year. But you have to protect your time, right? Because a 15-minute coffee is never a 15-minute coffee.
No.
It's an hour coffee, and it might take you 20 minutes to get there, and it might take you 20 minutes to get home. So it's actually a 2-hour coffee in a week where I don't have 2 hours spare. Oh, I'm obviously like the compound time police.
Yeah.
So it's not a thing. If I always say to people, if they want to catch up, you can come into my office and meet me where I am, and I'm really happy to catch up. But you just have to be really disciplined, because you can kind of get overly excited in what other people are doing, and
yeah.
And they might not even be as excited in their own plan as you are, and you kind of feel like you've tried to boost them up, and then you find out in 6 months they're not doing it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And just lastly, mate, you've been very consistent on LinkedIn and social media effectively for a long time now, right? And then I've watched you teach your team members, hey, this is important.
Yeah.
And they seem to have adopted that, and I see it pop up, and I think, shit, you've done well there too. Because so many people are scared of posting and whatnot, but you've obviously gone, hey, this is a non-negotiable as such, or...
I have never, had a whiteboard session or a meeting with everyone to say, this is how many LinkedIn posts look.
Yeah,
it's like, I might say the other week, hey, get some LinkedIn posts up or whatever, but it's not like, it's actually just one of those things that's, everyone just kind of gets into it, right? They're kind of, oh, hang on a minute, this is a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
And that's actually how we get a lot of people wanting to jump on board. They're like, I jump on my LinkedIn. You guys are all I bloody see. I feel like it's the universe telling me to come and jump on board. Like, hang on a minute, come on then.
Yeah, nice. Before we go, mate, because I know you're meeting with your brother, right?
No, Donny, Liam, my best mate.
That's the way. Malone, is it?
Yep.
I saw you guys water skiing the other day on some boat.
Yeah.
Is that right?
It breaks my heart that he's got no legs and he's better on the wakeboard than me.
Is he? How good.
Yeah, but no, we got that boat last summer, actually. It was a stolen, recovered boat, so we got a hell of a deal on it.
Shit.
And man, we just love it. We just kind of get out there and take a breath. So mate, he's an awesome best mate, and he's someone, again, who's super time conscious and adds value to whatever
too,
he does.
Yeah?
Super competitive.
Yeah.
If not more competitive than I am, right?
Really?
So it's a great, great kind of best
running
friendship.
Mate.
Yeah, running mate. And I'm sure it drives both of our partners up the wall.
I bet.
That we're both how we are. Maddie and G probably end up bloody nearly bitching and moaning about us behind our back. But hey, he's a top bloke, so you're going to catch up with him later on.
Good on you, mate. That's been fantastic. Anything that we didn't cover in this hour, because we've just ticked past an hour, that you'd love to get across to people listening?
No, I just think, if whatever you're doing, make sure you're having fun. Don't take yourself too seriously. Every day's a new day, and just get up and get after it, and do better than the day before.
Good man, mate. That's gone really, really quick, and there's some huge gems in there. So thanks for giving us some of your time. I've got no doubt that you will tick that $100 million mark.
Cheers, mate. Thank
it's you. Just a matter of time. So we'll get your tune back on to get you out of here, mate. But thanks again. That's my